Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Discover North Korea with me, Zoe, and my guest, Greg, who will be joining any second now, I hope. But firstly, I guess before, whilst we're waiting for him, I want to say a massive thank you. There he is. He's popped up. I want to say a massive thank you for joining back in the podcast today, because I have a guest on. I've started recording guests on videos, so feel free to go over to YouTube to see us and our lovely faces, if you'd rather do that. And if you have any questions, any thoughts, any feelings, anything like that, then do message me on Instagram at ZoeDiscovers or at ZoeDiscoversNK, or email me on ZoeDiscovers@gmail.com. So let's let Greg into this meeting right now, and we can get the podcast going. Hi, Greg. Can you hear us? Hey. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
How are you doing? Nice background. Very academic. Wow. I feel like I'm Skyping with Zooming with a professor.
Not yet.
Not yet. Soon to be. At some point. Looks. I like you've even got the plants and stuff. And what books have we got going on in the background? Presumably stuff on Korean history.
No, because all my Korean books are either in Budapest or somewhere in Jeju.
Oh.
I don't even know where my books are. I mean, I know where I have books, but I don't know where specific books are.
Why are they all in Jeju?
Because when I left Korea, it was way too... They could only ship to Budapest with EMS and EMS premium. So basically, it would have been way too expensive to send it over to Hungary. And I have a friend who lives in Jeju, and domestic shipping in Korea is ridiculously cheap. Like, I shipped 2 boxes of books and some like household materials for like less than $10.
Oh, what? That's crazy. Okay. Nice.
Why the only box I shipped to Budapest with books was for like $400. So.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Very expensive.
My parents' books.
Lovely. Just to let you know, we are I just kind of started recording. Hope that's okay.
I heard it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Zoom lady will kind of tell you beforehand. Cool. Well, I guess we can just kind of catch up for a minute because I haven't seen you in probably. Unfortunately, really sadly, since the last time we recorded a podcast, I can't believe that's the last time we caught up because we are actually friends, suppose.
crazy friends.
What have you been up to? What's been going on?
And I'm busy climbing up on the ladder of ground handling.
Very Lovica. Exciting. Hey, that's fun because the last episode that we did together was all about Air Choreo and you didn't have your new job by then, but now you do have a new job. Maybe we can tell the listeners what your job is because it has something to do with Air Choreo. It has something to do with air flight, maybe not necessarily Air Choreo. And I kind of didn't tell anyone, but like the theme of this podcast today is going to be about transport and stuff like that in the DBRK because we kind of didn't finish that last time. We just ended up talking about Air Choreo. But yeah, do you want to tell people what you kind of do now?
Basically, I'm working at Keflavik Airport as a ground handling agent. Very soon, I'm going to be a lead agent.
Ooh. So
it's going to be even more exciting because then I will have the chance to get into the cockpit and stuff or flight deck to be more PC. So basically, I'm responsible for everything which happens on the ramp or on the stand where the aircraft parks during turnover. So basically, if there's not a docking system, then we have to marshal in the aircraft. Mm-hmm. We have to put a jet bridge on the aircraft, the stairs, offloading, unloading, water service, lavatory service, pushback, communicating with the flight deck during pushback. So basically, everything which happens around the aircraft except for cleaning. Mm. And fueling.
Mm.
So I spend a lot of time in the belly of the aircraft, and it also changes the perspective of how luggages are handled.
Oh, so, okay. Like, not very well, I guess.
Well, it all depends on, of course, how you handle a luggage until it gets to the aircraft is based on your personality, because then you can be very gentle and stuff.
Mm.
But unless you use the power stow, which is a belt loader, which can go way into the belly of the aircraft. So basically your luggage is on a belt until like a few centimeters where it's supposed to be in the belly of the aircraft. So if you don't have that equipment, then basically the belt loader ends where the luggage hold door is. And then you have to get the luggage from there to the end of the aircraft.
Mm.
If you have four wheels, then it's easy because you can push it and then it goes all the way in. Mm. If it has two wheels, it's more problematic. But if it has no wheels, then I'm sorry, you have to throw it because otherwise...
Mm.
Loading of the luggages would take hours.
Right. So that's what you've been busy with, throwing people's luggages.
I would say 50% of my time. But since now that I have a heavy equipment license, I can operate all equipment around the aircraft.
Very cool.
I spend less time in the belly, the hold. Once I'm going to be a lead agent, I will spend most of the time around the aircraft coordinating the servicing.
And this has all happened very quickly. I feel that like you've kind of gone from like starting out at a new job to being promoted several times. So,
yes.
Well done.
I would say that my company is the company of opportunities because as uh-huh. everywhere else in Europe, we have staffing problems. There is not staff because, you know, there are two components to it. One is COVID.
Mm.
And, you know, most of the companies just laid off their employees because they had no job. And then when it restarted again, there was not enough people to do the job.
Mm.
Iceland has a new airline called Play.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to grow very quickly. And they have... like during the winter, we had like four flights in one period, like in the morning and then in afternoon. And now we have like sometimes almost like eight or even more.
Oh. So
we couldn't catch up filling up the employees. And also they needed more lead agents because, you know, more flights means more lead agents. And I guess because of my English, they expedited the process.
Right. I was going to ask that because, so you're working in Iceland. Can I tell people which airport you're working at? I don't know. Is that a secret? Huh?
Keflavik Airport.
Yeah, right. So the main capital.
The main gateway.
City, of entrance into Iceland, I guess. So you're in Iceland and you're in the main airport. Everyone look out for Greg. If you are transiting or if you're going to Iceland. I think you have a story to tell in terms of that, just looking at your face. But because you were just saying about the language, I wanted to just ask super quickly. Do you speak English? Have you started learning Icelandic? What is
it? Icelandic, there is more need for Polish at my company. Because I would say that 90% of my colleagues are Polish.
How similar is Hungarian and Polish?
Not at all.
Oh, okay, never mind. So the common language, the common lingua franca is English.
That's how it's supposed to be, but Polish is spoken mostly. Sometimes
enough.
I have to, like, you know, okay, guys, like, let me know what's going on.
That's a bit annoying.
The communication on the radio is in Polish, unless the person speaks Polish.
Wow.
But for me as a Hungarian, working with Polish people is quite pleasant, because there's a historic friendship between Poland and Hungary, which continued until the war in the Ukraine. Now it's a bit more complex, politically speaking.
Okay.
But we are traditionally good friends, and also being from East Europe, Central Europe, your preferences, we also have a shared historic heritage. So I would say that how, if you take out Catholicism from the picture, then I would say that the Hungarian and Polish mindset, the Hungarian and Polish work morale is quite similar, which is again a little bit problematic when it comes to work, because we work way harder than Westerners, Icelandic people. I'm really sorry to say that, but that's true.
I was just going to finish your sentence there and say, like, what, work harder than Western Europeans? Like, yeah.
Means that, and that's being understood by the Icelandic managers in the company, our workload is also much bigger than it's supposed to be.
But you're also getting promoted as you do so. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Stating facts. And I'm used to this kind of work morale. So that's no surprise for me.
Yeah.
Especially that, before that I worked in China, I lived in Korea, so...
Right, yeah.
It's nothing, new for me.
So has anyone seen you at the airport yet? You definitely looked like you had a story to tell from me mentioning that a second ago.
If someone ever checks out my Facebook or Instagram profile, they will see a photo of me which was taken up in Montpektu, when I was giving an interview to local Korean TV channel about visiting Montpektu. Mm-hmm. And that photo was taken by one of our customers. And they live in Iceland. It's a Italian-Polish couple. And they were flying back to Italy in February, and we met up for a coffee, and I said the next day when they are traveling, there's a small chance that I'm going to be around your aircraft, because they are flying EasyJet, which is handled by our company.
And
I was assigned to their aircraft, so they took photos of me while working around the aircraft.
That's so cool.
Chance to go up to the jetty, the jet bridge, and just wave them off just before they boarded the aircraft.
That's very cool.
So basically, this lady is always taking photos of me while working. That would be
pretty nice then.
Hopefully the next time that she takes a picture of you, it'll be back in North Korea, working back there.
Because we just published our second South Korea tour.
Ah, yeah, or in South Korea. Yeah. Before we get into North Korea stuff, maybe you can chat a bit about that. What is the South Korea tour? I guess no one listening will know anything about the South Korea tour, really, because I haven't started promoting it on social media yet. So they might have seen about it last year, but you take the floor. It's your tour.
Yeah, but before I go into that, just one more thing about meeting with the couple. So the lady was in charge before with the hotels, cleaning rooms and room service in Iceland. And she said that she was showing pictures what she took back in Pyongyang in Yanggang as an example of how...
No.
Yes. Of how a hotel room should look like. Not the quality, of course.
All the hotel rooms should look like the 1980s.
Room, but how, like, the room service supposed to be done.
Ah.
So basically, North Korea has some teaching material in the hotel industry.
In Iceland?
Probably all over the world. And she pointed out that, although I also pointed out that, like, yeah, but that's, you know, it's a bit problematic when it comes to being green, that she was, like, amazed by how when we received our laundry, like, every single item was folded into a small plastic bag, like, piece by piece. I mean, not piece by piece, but pair by pair when it comes to, like...
Oh, is it? I've never had my laundry done in the Yanggang because it's too expensive.
Oh, okay, then did you? Ooh, you must have been smelling really badly after the end.
No, I just bring enough clothes with me to last like the whole time.
Fun days?
I'm trying to think now, like what I did. Maybe I've never had it done in the Yanggang. I think when I went like on the mega tour or something, and it was a long time, I think I asked the guides what the cheapest place to do it is. And I think maybe. I did it in Chongjin or something, where you can pay like a random woman to do it. And I remember this is what the guides do. The guides were doing their washing in the in like the spa room, you know, the Jim Jolbang thing in Chongjin or up in the northeast. I can't remember which hotel it is at. And it has like an on-site spa. And you go down there and, you know, there's the guides enjoying the spa, but also washing their clothes at the same time. I was like, this is kind of really smart. So I did that as well.
When I was living in Pyongyang, I was doing my laundry. I was very like North Korean. I had like two sets of change. So every evening I did my laundry by hand in the bathroom.
Wait, but you literally just had like two sets of clothes for like a whole month?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I had two white shirts and like maybe three changes of underwear. And then in the evening, just before I took my shower, I also did my laundry.
To be fair, it's nowhere near as bad as when I was living at university. And I don't think my housemate listens to this podcast, but if he does, then sorry for pointing you out here. But I remember finding out in my first year of university that the way that one of my housemates does his washing is by taking his dirty underwear into the shower with him and then just washing his underwear in the shower as he's washing himself. And I'm like, I mean, it saves water, I guess, but I don't know how clean your underwear will get or how dirty your body will get from all that dirty underwear, but I don't know. Anyway, I don't know how we got to this topic. What we chatted about, the South Korea tour.
Yeah. Yeah, so we had already successful tour last year, as I pointed out, I guess, in our first podcast together when we had Nick and Simon on board
yes,
as well.
Yes, that's true. That's episode 5, if people want to go back to that episode and listen to it.
So because of that success and also because North Korea is still not open, and the best way to get as close to North Korea as possible is South Korea, because I don't think China is much of an option.
China's open for tourism now, but...
Yes, but you can go as far as at Dandong, and since you start to travel along the border, you might get into...
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, there's a lot of security up there.
I don't really like Westerners being around the DPRK China border.
Yeah.
So, because of that, we decided to run the tour again. And it's going to be in October, and basically we're going to travel along the DMZ. Now, as opposed to last year, we're going to start on the west coast, Yeongpyeong Island,
mm-hmm.
Which is within the northern limit line, which is like the CDMZ or the CDML. There is a DML on the sea as well, but the northern limit line is like more extended because there is like dispute between the DPRK and the ROK on where exactly this border is, and the area to which like fishing boats are not supposed to go into and stuff. It also led to a conflict in 2002. There was a battle, Yeongpyeong is called, between the Northern Navy and the Southern Navy. It was actually during the World Cup. So had some more political motives as well than just, you know, debating the exact boundary between the two countries, the two regions. And there's actually a very good movie about it called...
What's the movie called?
The Limit Line.
Oh, okay. Maybe I can put the link in the show notes so people can go to it.
And also the... there was a shelling of the island in 2010, I guess. So actually there is a security education center on the island, which we're also going to visit. Which is housed right next to a building which was hit by the North Korean shelling. And also the replica of the boat which took which was involved in the Battle of Yeongpyeong in 2002 is on show right next to in the garden of the War Memorial of Korea, which is like the Korean War Museum in South. And it just reminds me of Pueblo. Because it also has like exactly how the North Koreans, you know, there's the red circles around the ballot halls.
So interesting.
Pueblo. Have the same red circles around the ballot halls on the boat, which is on show, and the South Korean boat, which participated in the or the replica of it, participated in the Battle of Yeongpyeong in 2003 and so on and so on.
Wow, it's interesting how the two sides have both done that so similarly. Yeah. I just want to say, for those that don't know what the Pueblo is, it's basically the American spy ship that was taken by North Korea, and it's now on show in, it was in Wonsan, it's now in Pyongyang, and you can go and visit it, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, but also when you are on this South Korean tour, just cannot stop discovering the similarities between the two sides. We had a customer on tour. We should have her on a podcast.
Yeah.
Because she had really good eyes in recognizing these similarities. And she kind of ran a series on her Instagram.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Photos from her trip to the north. and her trip with us to the south and comparing the two experiences.
Okay.
I think on similarities. Yeah, but yeah. So we're going to start on the west, and then we're going to visit most probably the GSA, the Joint Security Area where the Blue Hats are, although it's yet to be confirmed because as of now only South Korean nationals are allowed to go on tours for the GSA.
And then we're going. So the JSA is, that's the area with the Blue Huts that everyone knows and stuff like that. So the DMZ, what Greg is talking about, is the demilitarized zone, right? But most people think that like the DMZ is just those Blue Huts. And actually I posted a picture on my Instagram the other day saying like the DMZ, and it was an image of these Blue Huts. And someone commented saying like, I thought that, it would be like miles and miles of like nothingness and wasteland and, you know, trees and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's really built up and it's got houses and stuff like that on it. And I'm like, yeah, but this bit does, like, this is the JSA. This is like the area that, you know, is the kind of touristy bit of it that most people visit, and it's the Blue Huts, it's a recognizable bit. But what Greg is talking about when we talk about the DMZ is, you know, there is a line that separates North and South Korea, and it goes all across from east to west or west to east, and that is very, very long. Greg probably knows the exact numbers because I'm very bad with that, but it's also very, you don't know. It's also very wide. So it's about, I don't know, I think it's about 5 miles wide. And that is literally just, land of incredible nature. And it's so interesting, actually, in recent years, such incredible nature has come out of it because it is no man's land. And there has been like endangered species spotted there and stuff like that. So, just wanted to clear that up for people. How long is the DMZ?
So... 2 kilometers to the north and the south. When you talk about,
not 5 miles,
is let me
put you on the spot now.
So basically, the problem is that I started out as a history major, and during my very first exam, I told the teacher that there are two things I can't remember: numbers and names. And then they agreed that that's probably history is not for me. And
that's really funny. I'm the same though.
Life proved him right.
It was definitely good of you to go into anthropology instead. You're more of a people person instead of a number person.
Kilometers.
Wait, say that again.
240 kilometers is the length.
240 kilometers long, 2 kilometers wide.
4 kilometers, because 2 and 2.
Oh, sorry, 4 kilometers. Yeah.
But speaking of incredible nature and endangered species and stuff, we are also planning to gain access to one of the DMZ hiking trails.
We tried to do that.
Yeah, and back then, and I think right now as well, it's only for South Korean nationals. But we are working on it, so probably it's going to happen.
That's so cool. What is the? I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory, but maybe talk us through like where that goes and stuff like that, and where it is on the DMZ, because it's, you know, it's 200, whatever you just said, 2,000, 200. I can't remember numbers. Yeah.
There are quite a few sections, and the one we are trying to do is on the east coast, so at the Kumgangsan area.
Okay.
But also we're going to visit Chorwon, where Zoe and I went together in 2018.
I still have all that content that I need to make into a video. I just haven't had time. It'll come out at some point, and we'll look so young.
And it was fun. It was a fun trip.
It was.
So we're going to visit that as well.
And what is that?
So basically, that's kind of the middle of the DMZ area, which actually is supposed to belong to the north. You can visit two observatories there. Actually, one of the observatories is Sungri or Victory Observatory, is the best I ever been to, because that's the closest to the demarcation line. You can quite see quite a few military outposts. It's actually part of a military outpost. They just made it observatory. So basically there you cannot take because of the safety concerns, but you can see a lot.
Okay. Do you also have to sign, because I know when you visit the JSA from the south, you have to sign like a waiver saying like, you know, if anything happens to you here, it's not...
I didn't have to.
You didn't have to. Why?
Because it was a special. But yeah, when I was on like a proper 100% tourist tour, then yeah, before the security briefing at Camp Boniface, you have to sign a paper that if something happens to you, it's because of all these
things. Wow. Wanted to come. Wow.
But no, not there. But there, the bus has to get like a special placard saying that we are being there. There's check-in for us. I mean, it's not part, it's all doing behind the scenes, but we have to list all the people who are visiting, and so on and so on.
Okay, yeah.
And then we are also going to visit Umgangsan area, which is on the east coast. There we're going to stay in a hotel, the Kumgangsan Kondo Hotel, which is very similar to hotels in North Korea. As much as that even we had problems with the elevator.
Oh, really? Hey, is this the hotel that South Koreans only are allowed to stay in, but then somehow we now stay in?
It's not that it's only South Koreans allowed to stay, but the argument, so basically they do everything to prevent you from staying there.
Why?
For some reason. Because it's really, it's not up to, they believe that it's more like for South Korean tourists spending the weekend in the area. You know, that there's this argument in South Korea and North Korea, in Korea in general, that it is not for foreigners, it's for...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's quite a normal thing to hear in Korea.
It's not that there is something, like there's not a legal background or a regulation behind it. It's just like how they see it or how they want to, you know, have a shortcut to the end of the conversation.
Yeah, and it's funny that you should say that, like, that's in South Korea and just generally in Korea, because, like, a lot of the time I think when that's said to you in North Korea, like, why can't I do it? Or it's, you know, it's for the local people, it's not for the foreigners. Then, of course, like, your brain switches and it's like, oh, my God, there must be, like, something really, like, super cool in there that, you know, it's because the foreigners aren't allowed to see it, or, like, it must be top secret information in there, or it must be something crazy because it's North Korea. But, like, you make a good point, like, it happens in South Korea too. Like, it's just a Korea thing. Like, sometimes they just want to keep things for themselves and not let foreigners enjoy.
And also, I think they have a view of Westerners and Western, like, what are expectations. And if they believe that these, like, the circumstances there are not up to those expectations, then, you know, it's better if you just, you know, keep foreigners out of it. It's like it's like a reversed Orientalism.
Right.
They have their own like exotic views of the exotic other, which is in this case being the Westerner, and how they, you know, how we you know, enjoy life and stuff. And then if it's in those standards, then it's just easier to say that it's not for foreigners.
True. And that's both in North Korea and in South Korea. And also, interestingly, I mean, it's also in China as well, like, but more in the bureaucracy of things, in that, like, you know, there are a lot of hotels that foreigners can't stay in China, and they are local only hotels, and they don't have a permit to give foreigners. because of that reason, like the hotel is not up to standards. And you find that in North Korea as well, you know, like there are some hotels I think that like foreigners can't stay in or like stuff like that. And it's because like they think that it's not up to standard.
But in the north there is also the fear that, you know, it can be turned against them.
Yes. Yeah, they have that paranoia. Which is well-founded paranoia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, like sometimes it will sound awful and a bit, but sometimes I would love to take some of our colleagues or some of the decision makers on trips to other parts of Southeast Asia or Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Show that what you think is the general is only for the privileged white people.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. And not like the rest of the world, at least as far as accommodation standards go. Like North Korea is not lagging behind.
And it's amazing. And like for someone that like me, like when I first went to North Korea as well, like I was like a backpacker traveler, right? And like I you know, to be honest, I hate the fact that I'm almost 30 and still staying in youth hostels, but I do just because they're cheaper and stuff. And, you know, I haven't had a job for the past 3 years probably. So you can relate. So, you know, especially when I started working in North Korea, it was like 5 years ago, I was like mid 20s. And like I was staying in youth hostels all the time. I went to North Korea and like you have to stay in like one of their standard hotels. And like for me, I was like, this is luxury because I'm used to staying in hostels and stuff like that. And I think like what they don't understand is, you know, that like some people like that kind of a bit grimy, a bit like, you know, more down to earth travel. Of course, like not everyone, but some people like it's more authentic experience. And I think the North Koreans could never understand something like that unless they go away for themselves. And, you know, brings us back to one of the conversations that we've had, like with one of the tour guides who's, you know, finally understood the joys of walking around in a place instead of just being driven around in a place. And that was her first time abroad and stuff. So kind of relates to that, I guess, right?
Yeah. And actually, we don't have to go as far as like the developing world. Like and it's something also we talked about with the Polish lady who I met here in Iceland as well. That mm-hmm. for us, it's our childhood.
Right.
So in Hungary, there was something called Szotüdülő, which is like the holiday home of the unions, of the work mm-hmm. unions. And the standards of the hotels in the countryside are exactly the same as the these former holiday homes for the working unions in Hungary in the 1990s. So for me, that was the standard. That's something I used to, and that's brings back memory for me. And I'm sure that it brings back memories for those who grew up either in the socialist bloc or in the 1990s of in a post-socialist country.
Mm.
So for me, it's not something alien. It's not something, you know, that's the standard for us.
Right, yeah. It's interesting that you have that comparison because I can't relate, but no, it's very interesting. Before we get into like talking some more, I just wanted to say like, we've done it again. We just carry on chatting about stuff. Should we make this episode more about like South Korea, and like you can explain more about the tour and the interesting things that you can do in it, and then like we can just carry on talking about that?
I think we should save a podcast for the South Korea tour.
Yeah.
And then we can maybe try to bring someone on who actually did the tour.
Okay, let's save that for next time then.
See their experience and their insight in comparing North and South.
Okay.
And especially those who been to North Korea, they
right.
can point out the real value of the tour, but that how much you can learn about Korea.
Right. Okay.
For the DPR, even without going there.
Right. So we should probably stop talking about South Korea. We've had like half the podcast. Okay, so for those listening, we are doing a quick change from South and North Korea to talk about transport, which I guess, you know, we'll take the tram on over from the south to the north. And I guess we'll have another episode. Hopefully Greg will bring a guest along and we can hear about the South Korea tour. And how you can join as well. I will put all the information to the South Korea tour in the show notes as well, in case, you know, your appetite has been sparked and you just need to find out some more information straight away. It is a very cool tour, but it's not the topic of conversation today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, topic of conversation today. Is what we tried to do last time is DPRK transport. Last time we talked a bit about trains, we did. And then I also, for the past two podcasts, have actually been doing like a live train journey from Beijing to Dandong and the North Korean border. So we've covered trains, we've covered planes. What other transport is there left in the DPRK? Maybe we should go over like the biggest one, because I feel like we might just get stuck there. And if so, we'll just have to have a transport number three podcast. But should we do Pyongyang Metro?
Okay, but just before that, so just to have the connection between South and North transport-wise.
Okay, go on. What have you got?
During the Sunshine Policy in the 2000s, when it was possible to go over by train from South to North, obviously, and then the Kaesong Industrial Complex also had a railway connection, and we can see during the South Korean tour those train lines. But on the East Coast, the Kumgangsan area, there was a train coming from the South to the North, which brought South Korean tourists into the special tourism zone, and also there were plans to use a ship South Koreans from the South to the North by the blimey, I forgot the name of the ship, which is docked.
What? In Greg forgot the name of something? That's not like you.
Hongbong 92, I think. Yeah.
Oh, the one in Wonsan.
Yeah. It's also supposed to be used for traveling between South Korea and the special tourism zone in Kumgangsan area.
So that is, taking South Koreans purely for tourism into North Korea, which I think will be shocking for most of our listeners to find out that was actually a thing, but it was during the Sunshine Policy era, which was, which dates in South Korea? The 90s?
It was in the early 2000s, late 1990s.
Yeah.
And the tourism project to Kumgangsan was, I think, between 1998 and 2008. 2008, the incident happened. And in the meantime, the right-wing government was elected into power in the south. So they stopped tourism.
Yeah, so the Sunshine Policy is a time period that's kind of often noted as one of the, friendliest periods between the North and the South in recent years. It was a series of engagement policies with the North instead of.
Yeah, so if someone is more familiar with European history, that's like the, as West Germany during the Willy Brandt administration had Westpolitik. South Korea for two presidential terms had Nordpolitik, which was like engagement. Failures, but it's better trying than not to try, I guess.
Yeah. And then unfortunately, there was an incident in Kumgangsan area where a South Korean tourist was shot, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. And as Greg mentioned as well, a change in government in the South as well. So that kind of stopped that sunshine period and also stopped the tourism in the Kumgangsan region. But is the train that you're talking about the one that we also visited on our tour as well? Like when we went there just for travel? Because we did go to a train station that connected North and South.
It was in Cholwon. So, so that train station was the last station I think that was the line between Seoul and Wonsan.
Mm.
And that's the last station in the south.
Okay.
But that's not in operation, it's just a historic station by the Japanese.
Right. Whilst we're on trains, why don't we chat about trains, actually? Like, I don't mean about like Chinese trains and the train that took us into, that takes us from China into North Korea, because I've touched on that before and we talked about that before, but the internal train network in North Korea and where you can go, and because you have a quite unique experience where you traveled a lot on the train in North Korea, right?
I'm still not the record holder. In terms
did we
of
talk
time...
about this last episode? I can't remember.
No, we didn't really touch upon it, actually. Yeah. Maybe we mentioned that it's possible to travel from Pyongyang to Rason.
Yeah.
But we didn't go into detail.
Go on, we'll go into the details.
Basically, as of now, because before it was possible to take other trains as well. And I'm not sure if it was possible in the history of Korea tours, but when my grandparents visited in 1988, they took the train from Nampo to Kaesong.
From Nampo to Kaesong. So Nampo on the west coast and Kaesong are just further south. Kaesong is on the border to the DMZ. So if you're going Nampo to Kaesong, I don't know if my camera's flipped here. I can't really tell, but you're going from west kind of to the middle and then down.
I'm sure that they had to go travel through Pyongyang. So I think it was like Nampo to Pyongyang, Pyongyang to...
Okay. Pyongyang Kaesong, that's an interesting line.
And they took an overnight train. So at some point, it was possible for foreigners to take more than one domestic train. But what we are talking about now is... so basically, there are... Ooh, I can't remember. Not at the time, but there were trains from Pyongyang all the way to Moscow. So basically, maybe twice a month, there was a train from Pyongyang which went. At first, it goes from Pyongyang to the east coast of North Korea, and then it travels up north along the coast. To Rason, which is like the special economic zone, where the border, like so DPRK, China, Russian border is. And then it crosses, the train crosses over to Russia. And then at some point it joins with the Trans-Siberian railway coming from Vladivostok, and then you can travel all the way to Moscow.
Yeah, I've taken that one. So that would be, how long would that ride be in total, Pyongyang to Moscow? It's about six days from Vladivostok to Moscow, right?
I don't want to lie. I could look up because I have the schedule somewhere on my computer.
It's okay. You can tell me after. I'll add it in the show notes.
I think it's like 6 to 8 days.
Yeah.
Plus how much it takes in the north.
Yeah, right.
So basically, so if you take the train, then there is at least 24 hours in Rasson.
Okay.
Because they leave enough time. If there are delays on the North Korean side, they can still, you know, catch the Trans-Siberian on time.
And are delays Russia. Common on the northern side?
Yes. for various reasons, when I was traveling, it took us. I think we were delayed for like 12 hours or even more.
Mm.
So basically, that's an electrified line.
Right.
And sometimes there are problems with electricity.
Yes.
Or even if they use like diesel, just to make sure that there is no problem, if there is another train in front of you which runs on electricity, then you're stuck.
Yeah.
Or we had a customer who was actually delayed, because that was when Kim Jong-un went up to one of the White Horse rides.
Uh-huh.
They were waiting for the marshal to pass.
Right.
I think they were back to Pyongyang.
How long were they delayed for?
Ooh, I can't remember, but they are the record holders in the history of Korea tours.
Okay. So we're talking like days they were delayed for?
I think it was more than 24 hours.
Okay, wow. In that case, could they get off the train and stay in a hotel nearby, or did they literally just have to stay on the train? Wow.
And those carriages, in my case, the carriage didn't have air conditioning, and it was only at the end of August. But that's like, then what is the other time when you have chance to spend time with the North Koreans? For like 24 hours.
Yeah.
Where there is no escape for them, there is no escape for you.
Yeah.
It's and then and you pretty much, you know, if you don't want to be bored to death, then that's the only, like, I didn't have any problem with the delay because I really enjoyed it. It was like we played card games, we ate together, we shared our food together, just with our colleagues. We had conversations. It's an experience which is not really possible outside the train experience.
Hmm. Just a very, everyone's in it together. I think that, you know, if you've got something binding like that, that like, you know, your train is delayed, it's such like a human thing. It's like, who in the world has not been on a train that has, you know, that has been delayed? Like, I think everyone has experienced a train delay at some point in their life. So, you know, everyone understands it and can empathize and is also in it together. So that's the first thing that binds you. But then of course, it's a very unique experience.
And it also, if you keep your eyes open, you can see, like, because, you know, they have domestic carriages as well. So you are put in the carriage which will go over to Russia.
Right.
And the rest of the train is the domestic carriages for the Pyongyang, Chongjin, Pyongyang, Rason line. And you see, like, how people are getting off. And then, you know, and then they hang out on the platform. You can see quite a lot. You can see stuff which confirms some of your readings.
Okay.
You know, people always complain that, you know, you don't see real life in North Korea, you don't see real North Korea. They only show you what they want you to show. But, you know, electricity is not running on a party order. So if it's off, it's off. Maybe it might be off somewhere that they wouldn't want you to stop. And you see, and it's just a question of how much you keep your eyes open. So it's a very good experience in every respect, in the social respect as well, because as I said, you spend almost unlimited time with North Koreans. Also, since they are on the train, which is like boiling hot, it's not, you know, they not won't be on in their, you know, tie and suit.
Right, yeah, they've actually like changed into their sports gear, or they're comfortable, like they've taken off their shirt and now the guys are just wearing their vest tops underneath. I can imagine it.
And that also changes the whole atmosphere. Like,
yeah,
they become less of like it's less official. It's like you become buddies, not like I mean, for me it's not a big change, but for the tourists it's a massive change.
Yeah. So when you did this train tour, were you just by yourself or you were with tourists?
So I was with actually the couple I met here in Iceland.
Yeah.
It's a shared experience.
Oh, so that's how you got that's how you got up to Chilbo to Paektusan on this train?
No, it was on a different tour. We went up to Rason. It was the same tour, it was just an extension of the tour, because I've never been to Rason before. So I wanted to go and see and, you know, and meet the local partner there. And actually it was funny because one of the he wasn't my guide, but he was the guide for the tourists. But I met a colleague who's working for the Rason International Travel Company, or whatever they are called, whom I helped out during my last stay in Chongjin. Because there was a conference in in Rason, and there was a French delegate who wasn't allowed back to China.
They didn't have the correct Chinese visa.
Exactly.
The bane of our lives.
So he's stuck in Rason, then they brought him down to Chongjin, and then they didn't really have a good flow of information. And then I just overheard their conversation and I just went up to them that, okay, like I work in tourism. I know the problem what you are talking about and I can confirm this, this and that.
That's very cool.
And that's also like, you know, he doesn't have to stay in Pyongyang because right, like there is going to be like a 3 hours to catch the flight to China. Then he had to check the, because he was taking advantage of the 24 hour.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. The transit visa or something. Yeah.
And stuff like that. And then we arrived. So there is a border, like an internal border crossing between DPRK proper and Rason, special economic zone. They just got on the train and then it's like, oh, I knew you were from somewhere. And then they remembered.
Very cool. So then you got to like chatting away and stuff. I'm sure you probably shared a soju or dried fish or two.
Not with them because we had different schedule. But anyways, it was fun. But also, I think you can take the train. So if you don't want to go to Rason, you can also take the train to Chongjin.
Okay. Very cool. Chongjin is North Korea's third largest city.
To be the second, but I'm sure.
No, second is Hamhung, I think.
I said it used
to be. Oh, it used to be, sorry. Yeah.
And then Hamhung is the, or Hamhung, Hungnam together is second biggest.
Okay. Chongjin, I'm trying to give a kind of visual to people that are listening. If we have Rason is kind of up here, like kind of closer to Russia and up here, and then Chongjin is like here, further to the left hand side, closer to China.
It's definitely not closer to China because Rason
Rason's on the border to China. Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm not good at geography. I'm really not good at geography.
Both are actually sea towns. So.
Okay.
East Coast.
Okay, I guess people can go over to Google Maps if they want to see where Asan and Chongjin are. But these are two places that the internal train network can take you in North Korea.
Yeah, and then Chongjin is also the city which is depicted in Barbara Demick's book, Nothing to Envy.
Ah, okay, yeah, probably people will know that one. If anyone's read that book before, Nothing to Envy. How long does this train journey take? How long does the one to Dasun, how long should it take? How long does it generally take to Chongjin? Same question. And the third question is, how often are these trains from Pyongyang?
I would say 24 hours is a good estimate.
That's how long it takes to either Rasan or Chongjin?
Yeah, yeah, because like Rasan to Chongjin is like 2 hours plus.
Mm-hmm. And do you have also a bed on these trains?
Yeah, it's a sleeper train. It's more like a Russian one.
Mm-hmm. Four beds only, right?
Four beds, but it's the one which is with like cubicles.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunately the beds are leather or like fake leather beds.
Yeah, I hate that. And like it's really sticky and they don't give you a sheet and stuff because they give you sheets on the Chinese trains.
What did they? No, they gave us sheets.
Oh, they did. Okay. Because I've been on them once before and they just don't give you sheets. And I'm like, ugh, it's really like when you're all sweaty and stuff and your skin sticking to that.
Did so that yeah, it's like four beds in one cubicle.
Is there a dining cart?
No. Oh. So you have to do your shopping before. But the there is a. At least in our cubicle, there was like a wooden thingy which could be turned into a desk.
Okay.
So basically,
you fold it down.
No. It's under the bed. You take it out from the bed, and it goes in the bits of the cubicle. So
okay,
basically,
that's interesting.
You have like a huge. Dining table kind of thing, mm-hmm. and the train attendant will like if you have for example cup noodles, you give it to the train attendant and she will take it for you boil, like to use the boil water and prepare it for you.
Ah, that's nice. So you don't have access to their own hot water yourself. You have to like get someone to do it, or she just does that because she's nice.
Honestly, I don't remember. Probably they have to boil it up. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's boiling all the time.
Yeah. Fair enough. So very different to the Chinese sleeper train experience. And so what kind of food did you bring on the train journey with you? You have to have, I guess, 24 hours worth of food, right? At least.
Noodles. We also ordered the jajangmyeon in Pyongyang station. So that was our breakfast.
Oh, that's funny.
So they delivered the jajangmyeon to, because there is food delivery in Pyongyang.
Tell us more, Greg, about the food delivery in Pyongyang.
So basically, I only experienced it when traveling by train, because I really wanted to try like the jajangmyeon, what's not prepared in a hotel, but like, you know, street food kind of. Jajangmyeon.
Mm-hmm.
And also like our colleagues said that, you know, sometimes you order jajangmyeon to KITC offices and
so they order food to the office. I love that.
Obviously, like, okay, then could we try it? And then yes, of course, yeah, why not? And
very
then,
cool.
When you get on the train, then they will order the jajangmyeon and then we begin to bring the delivery to the train station, and then you can have it on the train.
That's very
that
cool.
That was our breakfast. And then we had cup noodles, some North Korean snacks. I think the guide had some like spam. I mean, not the American GI. You know, North Korean version of the spam. They had something which was made of it was like dried pork stomach or something like that.
Sounds appetizing.
That was pretty good actually. The taste, smell wasn't, but the taste was good. We had tilapia. Oh yeah, we bought tilapia at one of the stations when we were waiting for hours. So basically, the food is what you bring
Yeah.
from Pyongyang.
Is there there are toilets on the train, I presume, or is just a hole in the floor toilet?
No. You know, that's something I should remember because I'm dealing with it as a tour manager as well. But because I personally prefer squat toilets.
Ah, okay. So you don't notice either way.
I wouldn't have this shocking experience that, oh my God, they don't have the
Yeah.
toilet because, oh, that's they have what I want to have. So,
Fair.
like, let's face it.
Yeah. And they had running water, I guess, or no? Wash your hands. Cool. Nice. Anywhere, and how long do they go? Sorry, that I kind of cut in with all these questions. How often do they go? It's like once a week or?
So no, the schedule is not like that. There are certain dates every month, which I'm sure is on our website. I mean, it's definitely not valid currently, but the schedule is up on Corio's website, and it represents the reality back in 2019.
Right. I have a question. Oh,
Or 20.
right. I have a question that just came to mind because I remember taking the Trans-Siberian from, well, I took the Trans-Mongolian technically from Beijing to Moscow. And when you transfer from China into Mongolia, I think it is, or Mongolia into Russia, I can't remember. The train changes tracks. Does it do that? The DPRK train when it goes into Russia?
Yes,
Ah.
but it's done. So basically, so what's happening that you get off in Rason, the train goes further to Mangang Station, and that's where they change the tracks
The
or
tracks, yeah.
actually.
Ah.
But you don't experience that change because you are touring Rason while it's being done.
That's the 24-hour period in Rason, and yeah, because I remember on the Trans-Mongolian, you literally like sit on the train whilst it's happening. It's a bizarre thing that your train carriage is lifted up whilst you are in it. I mean, you don't feel it lifting up because it's like a massive train carriage, but like you can see it if you look outside. It's very interesting.
It's also happening on the Ukrainian-Hungarian border.
Oh, right, okay. Ah, so it's a normal thing for you, I guess. It's not interesting. Never
I
mind.
never traveled,
Okay.
but the concept is not alien for me
Right.
because
Yeah, for me, being British and on an island, we don't have. Oh, we do. We do have train connected to France, to mainland Europe, like to.
eyes and you know this whole tracking is basically for security reasons.
Is it?
Because in case of war, and if your territory is occupied by the occupying forces, it takes them a lot of time change their train tracks to the occupied territory's tracks.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of
So
sense.
that's why so for those who have no idea what we are talking about, the gauge width is different in the former Soviet Union and the rest of the world.
Right.
The Russian or the Soviet one is wider than our standard ones.
And that's why you have to change the tracks of the train. Very interesting. Cool. This is why I need you in my life. It's all these things that like I just miss out on. Is there anything else noticeable about the internal train network in North Korea. I presume it's probably one of the cheapest in the world. Would I be right in saying that? It's probably not for foreigners, it's super cheap, but definitely for North Koreans, it's maybe very cheap.
That's something I suppose it's cheap, but the problem is that, you know, not everyone is allowed to take it, so you have to get permits. It's not like that, you know, you want to visit your grandmother in Wonsan and then you just go to Pyongyang station and okay, hey, give me a ticket.
Yeah. So what do North Koreans have
basically
to do?
when you buy a ticket, you have to, and also when the Korean guides are purchasing the ticket for themselves for the train, because you have to have a two Korean guides on the trip up to they usually come to Chongjin and then they take trucks back to Pyongyang. So basically they have to present their travel permit when purchasing the tickets for themselves.
Right.
And also because it's more common for tourists to travel from Pyongyang to Sinuiju, but they might have realized, especially if they were doing the Sinuiju extension, they were in the like, domestic carriages, that there are like train police.
Right.
The uniform, which is in this weird greenish, bluish color.
Yeah, I've seen them before.
So those are the ones who are checking the travel permits.
Right. Okay. And how hard can the regular North Korean get this? Do they have to have like a reason? Like, for example, if I moved to Pyongyang for work, but I did have family up in Rason, is that a valid reason? Can I go and visit my family to do that? No. People can't hear you if you're shaking your head.
I knew people or know people whose family is in Sinuiju or the other way around. They haven't seen their parents for 2 or 3 years.
Right. So I presume it will be a kind of like they're given the opportunity to go back home.
Yes, yeah, and most of the people that travel on the trains, they are traveling for business and other stuff.
Right.
We see a lot of soldiers on the train, traders, and I guess some people can get travel permits by, you know, going the other way around. That means like corruption or like some, you know, extra. So the train ride itself might be cheap, covered by your company, but if you are not sent by your company and you have to want to do it on your own and you have to get a permit and stuff, then I think all the extra spendings will be expensive.
Fair enough. I was just going to say something on that, but I've forgotten what it was now. Never mind. Okay. Is there anything else notable about the train? Because we're kind of going to have to wind this episode down. I know it kind of feels like we didn't really get into the train too much, but we've been speaking for ages, so maybe we did. Maybe have we covered everything that's noteworthy on the train? Do you have any anecdotes or anything that you wanted to say about your trip? Or is that pretty much, have we done everything?
I think that, yeah, that's everything.
Yeah, cool. So if foreigners... If anyone listening wants to go as a tourist and wants to experience the local train network in North Korea, where can they go? What can they do? Is there a tour, a specific tour, or is it more of a you have to do a private tour?
So we have at least one specific train tour every year, what we used to have. But it happened only once because then, and it would COVID. Have happened again. That's when COVID hit. And also, basically, that's tour. We wanted to do it with the Russian Far East. I mean, no Far East, with Vladivostok. So basically, we would have had a tour in Pyongyang, and then the event would have went up to Rason, and then do... the Russian part
Right. Okay.
And also, I was planning to do one more group tour, which would have exited into China, because the idea was that we should have, we should offer more group tours, which are visiting Rason.
Right.
But most of the tourists are doing it as an extension, as a tour extension.
Right. And as an extension of, like, they go on a tour to Pyongyang and then they add on, like, a train tour. Yeah.
But unfortunately, but if it's, like, a private extension, then it's quite expensive because you have to cover the train tickets for two guys as well.
Yeah.
So suddenly the train ticket, which is 150 euros, as it used to be in 2019, becomes 450 euros.
It's an expensive train ticket.
Because you are covering
for three.
Yeah.
Ah, man. So my initial thoughts of it being one of the cheapest transport networks in the world, even for the Koreans, was completely off. 150, even for the Koreans. I'm really surprised.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, because you have to pay. I mean...
No, I get it. But, like, you know, I'm surprised that the North Koreans still have to pay that amount as well.
But it's not that, that's not them paying it, and it's also in the international carry, so not in the domestic carry.
Okay, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're because as a foreigner, I guess you're buying like an international ticket and you have to buy like, okay. Yeah. So it will be cheaper for domestic North Koreans, but the North Koreans traveling with a foreigner are not traveling kind of as a domestic.
For example, you are not, you don't have to cover their way back to.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah. And that will be a lot cheaper.
Which is, I think it's a problem actually, because they have to take trucks and stuff. So my idea is, I don't know, but it's financially problematic because then it's going to be more and more expensive tour. But at least for the group tour, that we take a train, which allows them to catch the flight back to
Right. That's very considerate of you.
So, and it's usually always the same people who are doing that. Like there's not a big pool of local Korean guides who would do, like, and one of my colleagues did it like four times in a row.
Wow. Okay. Sounds tiring. Cool. Anything else you want to add?
Oh, about the train. Not now. We were trying to, and who knows, it might be possible. That is, you know, instead of taking the bus to Hamhung, we could take the train because it goes through Hamhung.
Right. Yeah. So that's one thing that I do want to point out is that what we've talked about today is domestic train journeys that tourists can take, but there are more domestic North Korean trains. There are more there is more to the internal railway network in North Korea than just what we've spoken about today, right? Yeah, maybe we'll have to definitely save that one. We've got a whole list of episodes that need to do with you, Greg, piling up. But I am gonna have to cut things off for now because we've been chatting for a long time. Can I give people your Koryo contact email? If they have any questions on, you know, the South Korea tour that we kind of briefly touched upon, and we will be doing a podcast on in the next few weeks, I suppose, to let people kind of know. If they want to contact you about that or also about potentially doing the train journey in North Korea once the borders open, I'm okay to give them your email?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's Greg. You can say it if you want.
koryogroup.com.
Greg@koryogroup.com. Okay, I'll put that in the show notes as well. And where can people find your Instagram? Because you mentioned it at the start. Maybe just give it a plug now.
So GERGOVACZI.
GERGOVACZI or VACZI, as my British compatriots might prefer to say.
Have a very special relationship to the English language, because in some respect I prefer British English, in some respect I prefer American English.
Well, that's one thing that we differ on, Greg, because I know which one my preference is. Anyway, thanks so much, Greg. stay on after I end this because I want to say goodbye to you properly. But for everyone else listening out there, I'm going to say goodbye, and we're going to pretend to say goodbye to Greg as well. You guys actually will be saying goodbye to Greg. Thank you very much for joining us, Greg. Honestly, if anyone has any comments or anything like that, anything you want to say to Greg, anything you'd like to see him talk on next time when we get together, let me know. Any guest recommendations, email me with anything on zoediscovers@gmail.com or any of my social medias, especially Instagram. I already always reply to @zoediscovers or @zoediscoversnk. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And we'll see you next time or hear you next time. Bye-bye. And see you later, Greg.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.